ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 30, entitled The Activities of the Prachetas, Text 8. Param vrinidvam badrambo yuyam me nripanandana sohardena prithak dharmas tushtoham sohridenava. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Varam, benediction. Vinidvam, ask. Bhadram, good fortune. Vaha, of you. Yuyam, you. Me, from me. Nripanandana, O sons of the king. So hardena, by friendship. Apritak, non-different. Dharma, occupation. Tushta, pleased. Aham, I. Sauhridena, by friendship. Vaha, of you. Translation and Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, My dear sons of the King, I am very much pleased by the friendly relationships among you. All of you are engaged in one occupation, devotional service. I am so pleased with your mutual friendship that I wish you all good fortune. Now you may ask a benediction from me. Shishirada Gopinath. Please repeat. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, My dear sons of the King, I am very much pleased by the friendly relationships among you. All of you are engaged in one occupation, devotional service. I am so pleased with your mutual friendship that I wish you all good fortune. Now you may ask a benediction from me. Purport. Since the sons of King Prachinabharishat were all united in Krishna consciousness, the Lord was very pleased with them. Each and every one of the sons of King Prachinabharishat was an individual soul, but they were united in offering transcendental service to the Lord. The unity of the individual souls attempting to satisfy the Supreme Lord or render service to the Lord is real unity. In the material world, such unity is not possible. Even though people may officially unite, they all have different interests. In the United Nations, for instance, all nations have their interests, have their particular national ambitions, and consequently, they cannot be united. Disunity between individual souls is so strong within this material world, that even in a society of Krishna consciousness, members sometimes appear disunited due to their having different opinions and leaning toward material things. Actually, in Krishna consciousness, there cannot be two opinions. There is only one goal, to serve Krishna to one's best ability. If there is some disagreement over service, such disagreement is to be taken as spiritual. Those who are actually engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be disunited in any circumstance. This makes the Supreme Personality of Godhead very happy and willing to award all kinds of benedictions to His devotees. As indicated in this verse, we can see that the Lord is immediately prepared to award all benedictions to the sons of King Prachinabharishat. Om Gyanam Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vanchakalpatrubhyascha Kripasandubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear sons of the King, I am very much pleased by the friendly relationships among you. All of you are engaged in one occupation, devotional service. I am so pleased with your mutual friendship that I wish you all good fortune. Now you may ask a benediction of me." So now the Lord has appeared before the Prachetas. As we know, they were performing great austerities for many thousands of years. And after performing this 10,000 years, we read, they were meditating upon the Lord for 10,000 years. And once this time was complete, the Lord has appeared before them because he's pleased with their austerities and with their meditation towards him. But here in this verse, the Lord is describing why especially he appeared before the Prachetas and why he's now willing to fulfill any desire that they have. And that's because not only did they perform austerities for 1,000 years, but during those 1,000 years, they lived together in great friendship. And so he was pleased with their the friendly relations amongst them. And because he was so much pleased by those friendly relations, by their the way they performed that service together, because of that, he said, "I am appearing before you and fulfilling all your benedictions." So this verse is actually quite famous. It's actually a very special verse, a very nice verse that Srila Prabhupada quoted very often, and that is, it's well known. Because there are examples of devotees of the Lord who please the Lord by their cooperation, by the way they dealt with one another, more than their personal meditation upon the Lord. So many yogis and devotees we read in the Bhagavatam attain the Lord due to their service to the Lord, due to their own spiritual practice. But in this case, they specifically attain the Lord because of their community of service, you could say, their cooperative service together. So this whole purport, Srila Prabhupada's purport, is on this theme of cooperation. And actually, in our scriptures, cooperation is a very big theme. It's not just in our own tradition as Vaishnavas or in terms of this particular bhakti tradition, but even in general. We find that the Vedic Brahmanas, they used to perform sacrifices, or they did yagyas, because the idea of yagya was that you perform sacrifice to play your part in the universe, so to say. So there's this idea of rita in the Vedas, that there's a cosmic order. So the Vedas themselves don't directly speak about Krishna or speak about the Lord. They speak in more metaphorical ways and in general terms. So they talk about rita, which is, they say there's a cosmic order in this universe. And the idea of yagya was to align yourself with this rita. So essentially everyone had to be, there's this, you could say, this massive system, this massive machine, and everyone is a small peg in that machine, is a small part in that overall whole. And so everyone, in order to be happy in this world, everyone had to do their part and align themselves in that cosmic order. And if they didn't, then that would bring bad result. So there would be a drought, there would be floods, the earth would not produce grains if they didn't perform sacrifices, because they weren't performing their part, you could say, as part of the whole system. So this was the idea of yagya, that yagya is pleasing the Lord, but it's pleasing the Lord by playing our part in that overall system, by satisfying the demigods. Because if we satisfy that, if the demigods give us rain, so if we give them the fruits of yajna, then they'll give us rain. Now, of course, ultimately that yajna, as Krishna says in the Gita, is meant for Krishna. And those with a higher intelligence, they'll do it for Krishna, because they'll understand that this is my offering to Krishna, who is providing everything through the demigods, is providing everything in this world. Similarly, the idea of dharma, we speak about dharma very often. So it's interesting that in the Mahabharata defines dharma in a very interesting way. It says that dharma, what is dharma, right? The definition of dharma, we have many definitions. We say duty, we say religion. Religion is a definition of dharma. But Mahabharata gives another definition. It says that dharma is that which sustains. So it says, whatever sustains, that is dharma. And therefore, it says, therefore, that which does not sustain is adharma. So this is a very famous quote, actually, from the Mahabharata. That New Age people like it. You know, it's like a very, environmental message. It has a nice message. But nevertheless, before this whole New Age environmental thing started, it was in the Mahabharata. And this idea was there, well, who decides? Why is one thing dharma and another thing is adharma? The reason why one thing is dharma is because if people act in this way, then society sustains itself. The world sustains itself. Relationships sustain them, become sustainable. And if they don't act in this way, which is adharma, then things break down. So the deciding factor in what is dharma and what is adharma is to see what sustains. So, for example, if let's say I'm living in some place. I'm renting a place, let's say. So I need to pay something. And that is dharma. If I don't pay something, then that's adharma. Why? Because in order to sustain that place, in order to maintain that place, I need to put my share into it, so to say. I need to put my part into it. Or if I'm part of a family or part of a society, community, then I have certain duties or certain roles. Because if I don't do these things, if I don't do it, then others will say they also will not do it, right? And if nobody does it, then society will break down. It's a basic concept of the golden rule. Or the common rule, like how society runs. So all these dharmic injunctions are meant to sustain society and sustain us. So our highest dharma, which is to surrender to the Lord, that's also a principle of, in some ways, this is what sustains. In the spiritual world, if everyone tries to be master, then it cannot work. So our role, and everyone's role in some ways, even Krishna himself, if everyone's mood is one of service, then everyone can be very happy. Right? Then there's no conflict. There's no conflict of interest. Everyone is satisfied. Everyone is peaceful. So the dharma of serving the Lord is also something that sustains. And also in terms of yoga, right, that in the yogic system, the idea is also that the yogi, that the body is in some ways a image of the universe, and the yogi is gradually aligning himself with the universe and is gradually raising himself to higher and higher. As he raises his life area within the body, he's raising himself within the universe. So the highest chakra in the body corresponds with the highest planets in the universe. So the reason why we come from the spiritual world and fall into the material world is due to a lack of cooperation, right? When we become non-cooperative with the Lord, then we fall into the material world. And there's a very nice quote from Srila Prabhupada. I was reading a few quotes of Srila Prabhupada in regards to this, where he was saying that how Krishna is very pleased to see us happy. In other words, because we might oftentimes be questioned that, what's wrong with me being the enjoyer? What problem does Krishna have in me being the enjoyer? So Krishna is very happy, is quite happy to see the conditioned souls happy. So that's not the difficulty. He awards the devotee the greatest happiness. But it's due to our lack of cooperation with Krishna. Prabhupada specifically uses this word. He says, our desire to, you know, work in a separatist way, in a way that's rebellious or disruptive to the atmosphere of the spiritual world, to the loving and harmonious atmosphere of the spiritual world, that removes us from the spiritual world. So it's non-cooperation in some ways which causes us to fall into this material world. Because this is our fundamental problem. This problem, you could say, has a long history to it. It starts all the way from the spiritual world. And it continues here with us in the material world. But if we were to cooperate with Krishna, so the issue is not enjoyment, in the sense that we'll enjoy as much, or actually far more, when we're with Krishna. So the issue is not that Krishna is saying, you're enjoying too much, and so now therefore you have to go into the material world. No, the enjoyment is there, but we're not using the right channel, or we're not doing it that in a way that's pleasing to the Lord. Just like the example Prabhupada says, he gives the example of a family, that the parents like to see the children very happy. But if, or even in any other institution, you can also see that example. But if the children become envious of the position of the parents and say, no, I want to be the master or the parent, and I want to enjoy separate from them, then that becomes a problem. But this enjoyment is there in either case. One is just in cooperation with the Lord, and one is trying to enjoy outside of the cooperation. So in the Gita, Krishna says, here, I don't have the Gita, but that's okay. Krishna says, 9:29, he says that, to one who surrendered unto me, to one who's devoted unto me, he says, to him I am a friend, and he is a friend to me. So this is the very, we can relate to this. Right? You're a friend to me, I'm a friend to you. Right? This cooperation there. If the soul is friendly towards Krishna, then why will Krishna not be friendly towards the Lord? So it's our lack of friendship, our breaking of friendship with the Lord, that brings us into the material world. And so this cooperation, it's in some ways, it's the essence of the spiritual world. That the spiritual world, we say, it's a place of perfect harmony, and the material world is a place of disharmony, or it's a place of quarrel and disharmony. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find that when Krishna was, before the Rasa dance, when Krishna was in the forest with the gopis, then he met the gopis and was enjoying pastimes with them, but then he left at a certain point, right? He disappeared. And what the Srimad Bhagavatam describes is that as a result of Krishna's association, the gopis became very proud. They became proud of their association with the Lord. And because of that, Krishna disappeared to humble them a little bit. Now, the question that comes up, and this question came to my mind also, that probably to other devotees who are reading that section as well, is that that how could such pure devotees of the Lord, who are so pure on such an elevated platform, how could they have pride in their heart? Right? Isn't there a point at which pride stops, a point where we don't have to deal with these difficulties anymore? We don't have to be afraid of becoming proud. So we read that fall down is possible up till the stage of bhava, and the platform of various platforms of devotional service. Up to the stage of bhava, one can fall. But once one gets to the stage of prema, then one cannot fall. Now obviously the gopis of Vrindavan are the highest devotees of the Lord. So obviously they were at the stage of prema. So how is it that they could feel pride? How is it that they could fall in that way, you could say, or have these feelings of pride in association with the Lord? Any suggestions? Pastime. Okay, yes. One is, okay, it's just Krishna's Leela. Through the gopis, he's trying to teach the world that it's that even the devotee has to watch out for this, that the devotee can't become proud, even of his own spiritual advancement, of his association with the Lord. So that may be one thing. But our acharyas, they also give another reason. They say that this pride that the Bhagavatam is referring to is not actually pride as we've experienced in this material world, material pride. They describe that at that time, when Krishna had played his flute, he had called all these gopis to the forest. So at that time, they're all coming from different places, from different areas, and running to the forest to Krishna, who was at one particular place in this forest. And they're also eager to see the Lord, to meet the Lord, because they're maddened by the sound of this flute. It's so enchanting, Krishna's flute and Krishna's beauty. So they had all come to meet the Lord. But Krishna wanted to do the rasa dance. This was the purpose of that meeting, to do the rasa dance. But because they had all come from different areas and different places, they were all thinking about the Lord in their own selves, you could say, in their own, they had their own ways of, okay, this is how I'm going to please the Lord, this is how I'm going to serve the Lord. They were sort of disunited because their minds were not together. They were not sort of in a group, in a natural group in that way. So Krishna disappeared from that scene, so that when he disappeared, then what happened? They were completely distraught. They were completely full of lamentation. And they took solace in one another. Right? Then suddenly Krishna is gone. The object of their affection, the object of their meditation has disappeared. So, and they're completely brokenhearted. So where will they take refuge in or take solace in? It's in one another. Because they're all in the same plight. They're all suffering the same difficulty. Right? Just like they say, a poor man can appreciate the pain of another poor man. Right? If we're all poor, then we can you know, identify very nicely with one another. Just like they say, misery loves company. So they were all deprived of the Lord. So in this way, they became poor, and so they immediately developed very close friendship amongst themselves. Very deep friendship, because each one of them was reminding, or you could say enacting the pastimes of Krishna, reminding one another of Krishna's various qualities and pastimes. And in this way, not only did they become attached to the Lord, but they became attached to one another in their service to the Lord. So it was to unite them, to bring them together, so that when the rasa dance happened, everyone would be serving Krishna together. So that pleases the Lord. You see, even with his highest devotees, he wanted to see them in perfect cooperation. And I was thinking that in some ways this is the idea of a dance, right? That we say the rasa dance is the highest sort of form of or manifestation of the Lord's pastimes. That the rasa dance, it means perfect cooperation. Right? Everyone in the dance has to play their part in that dance. Every foot has to be placed in the right place. Every hand gesture is in the right place. And without that, the dance cannot happen very properly. So Prabhupada often used to say that Krishna consciousness is moving from the material dancing, from the material dance of being turned by our senses and by material desires, to entering the dance of Krishna. Entering the spiritual dance, the dance of Krishna, where we're also dancing, but we're dancing in harmony with the Lord. So we find that this is in some ways the nature of the spiritual world. Jai Shri Radha Gopinath. So non-cooperation is how we fall from the spiritual world, and cooperation is how we get back to the spiritual world. Right? So this now, coming back to our own situation, this now is how do we now come back to the spiritual world, is when, like Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness means simply changing the consciousness. We're doing the same activities, but rather than doing them in a consciousness of separatism from the Lord, we're aligning our desires with the Lord's desires. So we're doing those very same things, but for the service of the Lord. And more specifically, Srila Prabhupada often said that, he said that your love will be shown to me by how you cooperate amongst yourselves. One time he says, how you cooperate amongst yourselves in keeping this institution together, or just in general, how you cooperate amongst yourselves. So the manifestation of love, the increase of our love for Krishna, which gets us back to the spiritual world, is a result of how is shown by how we're able to cooperate with one another. Because if we're able to do it in this world, right, amongst the devotees in this world, if we have that humility, that tolerance, that mentality in this world, then it gives Krishna faith that we'll be able to do it in the spiritual world. You see, because Prabhupada says that whatever we do in this world continues on in the spiritual world. That service doesn't change. When we perfect our service in this world, that perfected service is our service in some ways in the spiritual world. So, if we can show to Krishna that we've solved that problem in some ways, then that brings us back to the spiritual world. So, cooperation is in some ways a fruit of our, they say you can know a tree by its fruit. So it's in some ways the fruit of our devotional service. This is why Prabhupada sort of made this statement that to the degree that the devotee has love for the spiritual master, to that degree he can cooperate with other devotees. Because it's the fruit of our service. When the devotee becomes, does his devotional service nicely and becomes free of these difficulties of lust, anger, greed, envy, then only can we cooperate. Right? Our difficulty in working together and being able to serve with other devotees are due to these difficulties, due to these qualities. So in some ways, it's not a superficial thing. It's something that we have to conscientiously try for, but it's also something that's dependent on other factors. So if we're still attracted, if the mature world is still, and mature desires are still very prominent, then naturally our interests will come in conflict with another person's interest, because we want to satisfy ourselves by recognition or by getting certain things or certain possessing certain material objects. So really there's no way we can do it artificially. It is directly dependent on our spiritual advancement. That's why an advanced devotee can work very well with other devotees, and one can measure a person's advancement by how much they can cooperate with others, because that means that person's material desires are less. Because if that person cannot fulfill those desires, or doesn't, someone else comes in between those desires, it's not a problem that the devotee is not disturbed by that and can still continue with his service to Krishna. So our spiritual advancement is manifest by the decrease of material desires, and that manifests by our attachment, you could say, to serving with other devotees. Now here in this case, we're talking about the Prachetas. And who are the Prachetas? They were a group of brothers. Right? They were all part of one big family. And so this, you could say, is another level of cooperation here that Prabhupada is talking about. is that Krishna was pleased by the way these brothers worked together in serving him. So within our own Krishna consciousness and within our own, you could say, spiritual life, this is also one point of cooperation that Srila Prabhupada wanted. He said cooperating with the movement, and then he said cooperating also within the family. Right? So he was very eager that devotee marriages, devotee families, they stay together, they serve together, and he was greatly displeased when very unhappy sometimes when he heard that devotees would separate or there was divorce within his movement. Because that relationship, even though it appears material, even though it appears to be something on a very material platform, it's actually, the Lord is pleased when a devotee can maintain that. In other words, it becomes a service to the Lord when that relationship is engaged in the service of the Lord. Hanumat Preshik Maharaj, he told something very interesting. He said that something that he's noticed, just observed through his travels in the movement. He said that is that in our movement, there's many times there's divorce or separation between couples in the movement. And he said that he found that if the Grihastha families were not following the principles, then he said generally exactly after 6 years, there would be a problem in the marriage. He said after 6 years, the marriage would break down. And he had tested this many times. He had just by observation, because he was visiting so many places, that exactly after 6 years, that there would be a difficulty in that relationship. If they weren't following the principles. So to maintain a relationship, in the beginning, a relationship is very, you could say, very easy to maintain, it's very pleasing and all these things. But then later on, to maintain a relationship is actually very difficult, because on a material basis, it becomes in some ways an austerity to maintain that relationship. Right? In the beginning, it's a mature pleasure, but then later on, it's an austerity. So on a mature level, it's not pleasing. It sometimes can be not pleasing. But if the spiritual advancement is there, then that spiritual advancement can keep will keep that relationship together. One will keep that relationship together as a service to the Lord. Right? They actually, his study sort of matches what psychologists say. They say that after marriage, about for 6 years, then they call it the six-year itch. Then after 6 years, problems start happening. So that happens in the material world, in the sense that's a common phenomenon in the material world. So then, what then becomes the basis of the relationship is that relationship, when that becomes of the service to the Lord, then that continues. The spiritual life sort of comes at the basis of that relationship, and then that pleases the Lord, because the Lord can see that this is the devotee is here in this way performing an austerity in some ways for the Lord, is performing this as a service to the Lord, as an offering to the Lord. So actually it's very interesting, Srila Prabhupada, many times if you read in the Shiksha Amrita, sometimes his disciples who were grihasthas would come to ask for sannyas, and they would say that I would like to take sannyas, and it would be maybe 6 or 7 years after they had been married. And Srila Prabhupada was so smart, like you could say, he was so intelligent, so sharp. He was never in favor of it, even though you could see on the surface this was such a big step, and they're coming to take sannyas, and he would have more preachers in his movement to spread this movement all around. But he wasn't impressed at the least, and he would write letters back saying that this household life is not a farce, he said, nor is sannyas life a farce. And he said, better you stay as a grihastha and take sannyas later. Because he knew that this sannyas was not as a result of genuine spiritual advancement, may not have been a result of genuine spiritual advancement, was because it was in some ways an escapism, that now this household life is not so pleasing anymore, so let me take sannyas and I'll surrender my life to the Lord, and that'll be real surrender. But Srila Prabhupada's main point was that these disciples were trying to take sannyas for the same reason that they entered household life. They entered household life because they had some desires, some material desires, and they wanted to satisfy it and also serve the Lord. Now, suddenly the material desire changed. The senses wanted this emotional relationship. Now that relationship became an austerity, and freedom from that became, very pleasing. You could say renunciation became very pleasing to the senses. So therefore, they wanted to become renounced. But he said, but real sannyas or real austerity would be to control the senses and to stay in that ashram and serve the Lord. So this is how this is an austerity, because in some ways a cooperation is also an austerity that the devotee needs to practice. It's an austerity that is practiced and is cultivated in our devotional life. So the austerity, and every varna has its austerity. So the austerity of the sannyas ashram is that the sannyasi cannot enter into that emotional relationship. But the austerity of the grihastha ashram is that once you're in it, you can't leave it. That's the austerity. That once you're in it, then you have to stick to that emotional relationship. A person has to practice austerity in that way, has to practice humility and tolerance through that method. So, this is the qualities of the devotee, the quality of a Vaishnava, that not only the quality of a very advanced Vaishnava is that not only does he serve the Lord, not only can he serve the Lord very nicely, but he can also appreciate and work with other devotees. And many times we find devotees who are very good at their service, but have difficulty in appreciating other devotees. And that's very good, that's appreciated by Krishna, but we have to realize that a higher level is, a devotee is at a higher level if they can actually stay with devotees and actually not just resent them, but appreciate them. So I want to finish by just reading a few quotes, very nice quotes from this book called The Art of Chanting Hare Krishna by Mahanidhi Swami. In this book, he discusses the 10 offenses. And actually, the first offense is not to blaspheme the devotees of the Lord. And so, in this section, he writes some very nice things in terms of devotees and seeing other devotees. And so the first offense, as we know, this offense here is described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It says, it is a great offense to blaspheme devotees who have completely given up material practices such as karma, dharma, jnana, yoga, tapasya, to take complete shelter of the holy names. Harinam Prabhu will not tolerate blasphemy of those preaching the real glories of the holy name. One who accepts such devotees as the best of saintly people and performs Nama Kirtan with them will quickly get the mercy of the holy name. Now, one interesting point that he describes is that difficulties with the devotees often come as a result of association with non-devotees. So he quotes Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, He quotes the Srimad Bhagavatam, which Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told, he said, the first business of a Vaishnava is to give up the association of persons who are not devotees of Krishna and who are too attached to material things. So, though we may not realize it, the association of materialists and also, you could say, critical devotees or devotees who are critical in themselves, makes it difficult for us to appreciate devotees, because we start to see devotees as, as oftentimes we have more faith in materialists. You know, this is, you know, a respectable person. Devotees, you know, they're simple, or they're kind of naive, you know, or they're they tend to change our perspective, our mentality towards devotees. So many times this is emphasized that one has to give up, in some ways, non-cooperation is also important. Devotional life in some ways means a little bit of non-cooperation with materialists. We have to give up the ways of materialists and give up their association. So our materialistic friends may want us to do certain material activities with them, but the devotee is non-cooperative in that way. He won't go on with those activities. Here he says another verse. He says, it is better to accept the miseries of being encaged and surrounded by burning flames than to associate with those bereft of Krishna consciousness. Such association is a very great hardship. And this is very true. Sometimes I've experienced in my own life that it's a great hardship. It puts a person in great hardship to associate with non-devotees. Because here he makes the point that it destroys our bhakti sanskaras. In other words, through our devotional service, we get certain impressions of devotion to Krishna. And when we associate with materialists for long periods of time, then we lose those impressions within our heart. We lose that devotion very quickly. And then when we come back, we sort of have to redo it, recultivate it all over again. So then he says, so this is one aspect of it. Then he says, he quotes Chaitanya Bhagavata, in which Lord Chaitanya is talking about. This is a very interesting quote. Lord Chaitanya says, a person who calls one Vaishnava a big Vaishnava and another Vaishnava a little Vaishnava may be peaceful and happy for now, but for how long will he remain peaceful and happy? One should avoid a person who offends Vaishnavas, even if that person is otherwise very qualified. A little association with an offender will make one fall down. From Brahma down to the grass, every living being is Lord Krishna's energy. Therefore, all Shastras declare, Lord Krishna becomes very angry with anyone who blasphemes other living beings. If a person studies the four Vedas and then blasphemes others, he will fall into hell and suffer birth after birth. The sin of blasphemy robs all intelligence and fills the heart with suffering. Lord Chaitanya delivers everyone except the sinners who blaspheme Vaishnavas. Lord Chaitanya said, all the living entities in the numberless universes are my eternal servants. Therefore, any living entity who harms or offends another living entity will perish. This is very interesting. Lord Chaitanya here is saying, I'll repeat this again, all living entities in the numberless universes are my eternal servants. So, I mean, this shows actually that every living entity is the Lord's servant and is Lord Chaitanya's servant specifically. And it's Lord Chaitanya saying that these living entities are my servants, which means that ultimately they'll get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Therefore, any living entity who harms or offends another living entity, any living entity, here he's saying. So he's not even limiting it to devotees, but all living beings will certainly perish. If a sannyasi blasphemes an innocent person, the sannyasi will fall down and lose all his piety. Then raising his golden arms, Lord Chaitanya declared to the entire world, renouncing criticism of others, everyone please chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I will personally deliver anyone who does not criticize others and who once chants Krishna. Hearing Lord Chaitanya speak thus, the devotees cheered, Jai, Jai, Jai. And then Mahanidhi Swami gives a specific example of Lord Chaitanya's mother, that even to teach the whole world, Lord Chaitanya taught this principle through his own mother, Mother Sachi. He says, Lord Chaitanya's brother, Vishwarupa, always stayed with Advaitacharya, tasting the mellows of pure devotion. After some days, Vishwarupa accepted sannyas and left home. Although she did not say anything, Sachi Mata, who was Lord Chaitanya's mother, was grief-stricken and felt that Advaitacharya had made her son leave. So, Advaitacharya, Lord Chaitanya's older brother, Vishwarupa, went to Advaitacharya, and due to his association, he left home and became a sannyasi. And so because of this, Sachi Mata was grief-stricken. But then, Lord Chaitanya also started spending time in Advaitacharya's home. When Lord Chaitanya also started spending time with Advaitacharya, Sachi Mata became unhappy and told everyone, that Vaishnava is not Advaita, but Dvaita Maya, full of duplicity. Advaita means non-dual, and Dvaita means dual, so he's full of duplicity. For he has driven one son away, and now he will do it again. So, I mean, you could understand her frustration with Advaitacharya is very genuine. I mean, she's losing both of her children because of this one saint. Although Lord Chaitanya was distributing ecstatic Krishna prema to all his devotees, he refused to give it to his own mother, Sachi, because of her offense against Advaitacharya. So then at a certain point, she started seeing that everyone is ruling in this Krishna prema, but she wasn't experiencing it. Following Gaura's advice, Sachi became free from her Vaishnava prad when she took the dust from Advaita's feet. On the pretext of rebuking his mother, Lord Chaitanya, who is the Shiksha Guru of all, taught everyone to carefully avoid Vaishnava prad. So this is some very nice quotes from the Chaitanya Bhagavat. Now one thing also Mahanidhi Maharaj he mentions is that, well, sometimes we may say, well, but we have to correct someone else or find fault with them. And that's just, you could say, a practical side to it, that how is this practical? And that's very true, that needs to be done, but the expert devotee, he does it, but he does it with the understanding that he's committed a similar offense. So in the sense that he performs, sometimes it's necessary, he performs that correction, but he does that with humility. So therefore that, one thing it's his position to do it, so he's in the correct position, but also he does that same correction with humility, with in a very kind way. So just as a qualification to this quote, because someone may say that this is very nice, Lord Chaitanya's instruction is very nice, but it's not practical sometimes. But it's practical in the way that the devotee does it with a different state of consciousness, with a humble state of consciousness. Okay, thank you very much. If anyone has any comments, we can take it for a few minutes. I see. Prabhupada, actually, one place he says anger has its place in spiritual life. And he says that anger should be shown to those who are envious of Krishna and his devotees. So if And even if that person may be a devotee, if someone is being very critical or envious of another devotee, then the devotee can become angry. Because but naturally not for himself, but for other devotees, that is in some ways humility, because that person is cannot see the other devotee being blasphemed. So yes, it does. I mean, that's why Prabhupada, many times we see that he would sometimes get angry, but it wasn't on the material platform. It was very short. It was just to do his duty in some ways. It was to solve the problem, to get the job done in some ways. And the main quality in him was, and in the devotees, is that he wouldn't keep the grudge, he wouldn't foster it. He would just do it for that particular purpose. Yes. So, like Lord Hanuman, he gave the example of Hanuman. Hanuman became so angry upon the demons when they stole Sita. So yes, that's a good point. That's a very, very good point. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.